Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. Every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. You can hear our program there. You can also listen to the archives. When this program's over, this program will be archived up there sometimes about 15, 20 minutes after the broadcast is over. And then you can listen to it and send the link to your friends and family and anybody else that you want to, especially if, like me, you have been more on vacation than off vacation since, for me, it's been since 1998, if you can believe that. And I hope you will believe that, because ever since I made a change in relationships back in that year, I have felt like I've been on vacation more days than working hard, struggling, strifing, and so forth. And that's sort of where our program is going today, because we're going to take a look at what it would be like if you made every day Friday. Doesn't mean that we take the attitude of some, you go into work on Friday and you tell the boss, hey, look, it's been a really rough week. We just need to lay off and have a little party. Not quite like that. We're going to find out just exactly what that's all about. But I do encourage you to stay tuned as we talk with our special guest, Marina Spence, and her book, Make Every Day Friday. Actually, it's Make Every Day a Friday. And that's also the website, makeeverydayafriday.com. I want to remind you that we'll have Beth McDonald at the bottom of the hour to talk a little bit about what's been going on. We have apparently, I'm wondering if this has anything to do with the shift by 4 degrees of the axis of the planet, or the fact that Japan is now 8 feet closer to the United States, or what the deal is. But they say that the full moon that's coming, which we may or may not be able to see here on the Central Coast and in Northern California, is going to be closer. It's going to be the largest full moon that we will see in a long time. I hope it doesn't get any bigger than it's going to. That speaks of horror films of sorts or science fiction movies. But we're going to enjoy that and enjoy the full moon and the transition into spring. Can you believe it? Spring is upon us almost. Monday, I believe. 21st of March, I believe, or the 22nd. And off we go. And, of course, we've been getting wonderful rain here on the Central Coast, which is greening everything up. And there are those who say that it'll continue on into the summer. We'll continue to get these frequent rain showers, which would be fantastic because this area needs it, to say the least. Marina Spence, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and bringing to us ways in which we can make every day a Friday, even though today is Saturday, and we'll be going into Sunday and Monday and all of that stuff, and we have to wait 7 days until the next Friday on the calendar. Thanks so much for sharing your Friday, Saturday with us.
Well, thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Now, the title is always intriguing. I have been listening to some morning people talking about traffic, and some Thursdays and Fridays it's very light in certain areas, and they think that, oh, well, people are going to a 4-day work week, which would then make Thursday your Friday, and then you have a real Friday, and then so you get a 4-day weekend. But you're actually talking about more of a state of mind, if you will, a shift in the soul or spirit as far as your attitude towards not specifically work, although it will affect it, but just your overall day-to-day existence.
That's exactly right. It could be a 4-day work week, or some people, you know, don't work Monday through Friday. It doesn't really matter. It's exactly the state of mind of being, knowing who you are and connecting who you are with what you're doing in the world, so that every day is a Friday.
How did you get interested in pursuing this aspect? And I know that later on in the program, we're going to talk a bit about one of the elements of this shifting or shifting of the mindset and the spirit through meditation. But how did you get going on this path? Because it doesn't seem like, let's get everybody focused on making every day a Friday. Doesn't ring the cash register a lot to me.
Well, I guess I never was the kind of person that was so interested in ringing the cash register, although that hasn't necessarily been a problem. But Well, how I got interested in it was I was where I thought that I would always, you know, I had always hoped to be.
You don't want to use the word should, do you?
No, I don't want to use the word should. Okay. I will avoid it at all costs.
Okay.
So, but I had been I had been working toward a career that it was my second career, and I had been working at it very hard, taking a lot of night classes to catch up. And I was ended up being very successful in it, software project management, managing large software projects on Wall Street. And I was there. I had the beautiful penthouse apartment, and I had everything materially that I ever thought I would, and or way beyond, actually. And there I was, having it all, yet finding myself more and more unhappy. And how that came out is one day at work, I did what women in corporate America are never supposed to do. I was at a very fast, working for a very fast-paced brokerage firm, and I just had a really, really, really ugly cry at work, and wasn't even, you know, just in my office. It was in front of everybody. So I was mortified. I was humiliated, Richard, and I came home that night, and the part of it that turned out to be really good is it started shifting me to looking and seeing what an important role that that work had in my life. And was this, even though it was meeting every material requirement I had and beyond, was this what I really wanted to be doing? Or was I doing this in the way that I really wanted to do it in? Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't the work itself. Maybe it was my attitude toward the work. So that put me on a very long inquiry that ended up with me taking a year and a half off to write the book and to work with other women who had the same kind of questions about their lives. You know, is this what I really want to be doing? Is this how I want to be doing this? Is this joyful? Is this my purpose? Is this what I'm here for? Is there something bigger? Is there something smaller? What is it? What is it that I want to be doing? So that's how it came about. Is it came about through pain?
Yeah. Now I'm wondering if the word that we use to describe what we do for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, doesn't help. Work.
Well, there's a lot of bad connotations to that word. I think that's a terrible way. It's a way to kill a movie title or a book or something like that to put work in it. But the fact is that in truth, I think most of us really do enjoy something that brings us purpose and something that brings us fulfillment, whether it is work or not. So I don't think it's intrinsically something that we don't want to do. There's a lot of connotations with it, for sure.
Well, I credit my father. One of the greatest things he ever said to me was, find a job, as he put it, find a job that you love doing because you're going to be doing it for a long time. You don't want to get stuck like I did. Now, he managed to make a transition in the 70s into the computer age. Back then, you had the boxes of punch cards and fanfold paper. But that was one of the things that he said to me, and I was very fortunate to, as I have said throughout my career, be at the right place at the right time, and boom, 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 and then now here I am some 30-plus years later sitting here in Santa Barbara talking with you about not working but really having fun at what you're doing, even when what you're doing is hectic and fast-paced and might be stressful in to the extent the observer on the outside might say, oh my gosh, they must be losing their minds. But you, being on the inside, are going, man, I'm loving this. This just drives me. I am so pumped, and let's make this really happen, and so forth. And that's the big difference, is that's not, well, would you still call that stress?
Well, stress is, as you said, just very individual. So for one person, yes, that would be stress. For somebody else, no, it wouldn't. And that's the key, is since we are so different, without knowledge of who we are, who I am, who you are, who the next person is, without that inner self-knowledge, it's hard to find the job that does bring satisfaction, that does bring happiness. because we don't know who we are. How do we know how we can be satisfied and how we can be happy? So I think that's one of the very first keys, is finding out who we are so that can lead to the career that brings satisfaction.
I think also we have been led to believe that we shouldn't waste our time doing anything that isn't in our quote-unquote career path. And yet, I can look back at the jobs that I have had, the work I've done, outside of broadcasting and producing and editing and so forth, and I can say, you know what? I learned this and this and this and this, and it was also a nice respite from what I was doing at the time to help me get a little perspective. So there really, I had one boss who used to believe in what's called the law of diminishing returns, which I don't believe in. It's because basically what that says is only put in what you're going to get out. Well, that gets you nowhere, and your returns become less and less and less because you're putting less and less. Instead of putting your all into it, you're always going to get something out of it.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And sometimes we don't know that in the beginning, and
right.
Sometimes it just is allowing ourselves that sense of exploration. So now I am still, my day job is still managing software projects. So I'm doing the very same thing that I did when I was so miserable. I guess that was 6 years ago, but I'm doing it in a completely different way. I have side interests that are totally enlivening the whole rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not sometimes so much what we're doing, but how we're doing it and how we allow ourselves to explore in other areas of our lives.
And you talk about three keys, if you will, in terms of creating a you've created a stress-free system regarding three inner keys of career change to basically gently ease you, if you will, or guide you towards changing your work attitude on the job, or even your home attitude, because our work attitude affects our home and all of these others because we spend so much time there.
We spend so much time. If each person listening would add up the number of hours that they spend at work,
mm-hmm.
and then that also includes the hours driving to work, commuting, whatever, and the hours unwinding from work, thinking about work, bringing work home, it is by far the biggest activity in our lives. So the fact of just treating it as something that, oh, it's just a job, well, yes, it is a job, but it also is this huge time grabber. So taking it with really analyzing it, and I have a quiz in the book that helps people see what is it that I like about my job and what don't I like, and of the things that I don't like, how can I change those?
Mm.
And because sometimes it's amazing, like we might think, I can't stand my job, I hate my job, when it just might be a few things that are really crucial and need to be changed, but it's not everything. So with these few tweaks, our lives could be very, very different.
So you're still in the workaday world, so to speak, 9 to 5, right?
Absolutely.
And you're still out there, being the breadwinner, if you will, from your side of it, if you will.
Yes.
And yet, you enjoy staying in there and doing that. This is now that you've written this book and you do some coaching for folks and teaching people how to shift their mindset, which we're going to get into in the second half of our program. But you've found those golden pathways, if you will, so that what you do that may be totally unrelated to what we're talking about here about making every day a Friday makes every day a Friday.
And it's not unrelated because I took some time and looked inside and found out what really makes me happy. And one of the things that really makes me happy is being who I am, being authentic and being true and having that, not having to be one way out at the workplace and then a different way at home or with my friends.
Mm.
So I have found a job where I can be who I am. There's a lot of flexibility there. The people are the people that I resonate with, that I can be friends with out at the job and not at the job. So it's just allows me somewhere where I can be myself. And that, you know, that's not so important for some people. So maybe that wouldn't be a value. They wouldn't need something like that. But for me, that's something I need, is to be who I am.
Yeah.
And be able to be who I am. So that's the importance of really honing in on who is this wonderful divine creature that we all are, and what does he or she need to be happy? And sometimes how we learn what we need to be happy is to take a look at what makes us unhappy, really hone in on it and pinpoint it and say, ooh, that's got to change, and be surprised at some of the things of who we are and what we like and what we don't like.
I think that I started sort of trying to figure this out a little bit. When we started about two and a half, three years ago, with the downturn in the economy and so forth, maybe it's a little longer than that, because I remember when we first moved here 5 years ago, May, the real estate market in Phoenix started to collapse, and we got out 2 weeks before that happened. But I started taking a look at the unemployed. The numbers kept growing, and I kept wondering, what percentage of those people would say they disliked or even hated the job that they were just laid off from?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to speculate that probably the majority of them. And I look at it more from a spiritual or metaphysical perspective, that things don't happen for no reason. These people, these specific people in the millions, lost their jobs for a reason, and not just because the companies were cutting back, but because they in their individual lives had created something. Do you perceive that at all?
Well, you know, yes, on the grand scale, I think. But when I'm in that situation, when I was that person, you know, 20 years ago or whenever, the times that I've been laid off, it kind of didn't matter, because I didn't have that perspective at that time,
right.
And I was too afraid of how I was going to, you know, pay the mortgage and take care of myself. So, I mean, I think that may be an accurate perception, but when you're in that position, it's really hard to see.
Mm-hmm.
And we all get caught up in the fear of where we are and am I going to make it? And sometimes it's not until we get out of that situation and have that learning of, wow, I got through that. I changed. I got into it, something different and something I really like, or I started my own company, or just whatever it is,
right,
that we had needed to learn, that we can then appreciate the lesson. But sometimes when we're in it, it's just not so fun.
Exactly. It's hard to be the observer when you're being pummeled by the universe, as it were.
It is.
Well,
and it's hard to trust, but yet that's what gets us through, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I, again, remember, Marina, I remember when in February of 2006, when I worked my last day on February 28th, and I'm packing up my desk on March 1st, and I get a call from my wife, and she tells me that she had just had her meeting with her supervisors, and she had just quit. And in my head, I'm screaming, don't you understand? I'm unemployed too. But I wasn't overly concerned. We had a small little nest egg at that time. And so we're sitting at the front of the TV that night. And she comes over and she says, I'm scared. I'm really concerned. And I says, well, you know, and I had no fear. I don't know why. It's just, it wasn't there. And I said, you know, of all of the people I've interviewed, the workshops and seminars and personal encounter groups I've been through and books I've read and so on and so forth, they all say the same thing. When you're at the edge of a precipice or a cliff, you jump and trust. And that's what we did. And it's remembering to do that. And we didn't have to wait until that moment in time to make the decision, hey, let's sell the house and move. We could have done it a year or two earlier, but for whatever reason, circumstances sort of opened that door really wide. And I guess maybe if we had tried doing it 6 months earlier, who knows? It may not have worked. So
right.
It's hard to know. It's like you said before, when you're in the midst of it, you don't know, unless you're really in touch with that intuition, you know, what's, if this is, should we jump now or should we wait?
That's so true. And that's why I do love talking about meditation, because meditation is such a beautiful way of helping us to get in touch with our higher self, our mm-hmm. deeper self, our inner self, however you want to express it, so that we do have this inner guidance that can help us in those kinds of decisions. So the decision of whether to sell the house and move at that time isn't coming so much from the head, but I love the way you expressed it. You know, you had no fear at that time, and that opportunity presented itself, and you took advantage of it.
Yeah.
And so the more we can feel our hearts and be guided by our hearts, and again, I found meditation a beautiful way of doing that, then the less, the easier it is for us to just kind of click off those little nagging thoughts in our mind that come out as worries and fears.
You know, 2 years earlier, in that month of February, my wife and I were in Ireland, and I was sitting on the edge of a granite slab facing, we were on the west coast of one of the Aran Islands, off the west coast of Ireland and off of, and I'm sitting there taking pictures, and my feet are dangling out over the Atlantic Ocean, which is, I don't know how many hundreds of feet down, but I had no fear at that moment. It wasn't until 10 hours later, I'm laying safe and warm in my bed, and I am racked with fear. And yet, this precipice, which would also have affected my life 2 years later, there wasn't that 8 or 10 hours later kind of thing. I guess maybe it was because I had made the decision to sit out on the edge of that cliff, did not consult my wife. And, of course, she's going, where's the life insurance policy again? This time we were doing it together, and maybe that's the reason why there was no aftershock of fear. Like, oh, my gosh, what have we done? Decided to move to Santa Barbara and pull up stakes and make our home here. Each experience we learn from and we move forward in. And to me, it's extraordinary that you've come up with this concept. I want to talk, when we come back from our break, Marina Spence, author of Making Every Day a Friday and at makingeverydayafriday.com. I want to talk about meditation. Your take on it, as it were, in terms of what you teach people, how you teach people to meditate, what the goals are, if any, what is it we're trying to achieve in that regard. And also, if we can touch on the three inner keys to help people to transition, if you will, shift. The earth has already shifted 4 inches. Can we, in kind, shift 4 inches to the left or to the right to make a change in our lives? I'd like to talk about that when we come back. Okay?
Sounds great.
All right. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we're going to be back with Beth McDonald. Stay right where you are.
The Chari Center of Health with Deepak and Ropa Chari bring you this health tip.
Today's Chari Center of Health quick tip is for heart health. What is high blood pressure? We need to understand how our body keeps blood flowing through it. Your heart carries blood from your heart to your entire body through a system of arteries, vessels, capillaries, and veins. When your heart beats and blood is pumped into the arteries, the blood actually pushes against the walls of the arteries. A blood pressure reading has two numbers written like a fraction, one number on top and one on the bottom. This reading measures the amount of force in two ways. The top number, or systolic blood pressure, is the pressure in the arteries when the heart muscle is pumping blood. And the bottom number, or diastolic pressure, is the pressure in the arteries when your heart is resting between heartbeats. How do you monitor your blood pressure? Buy a blood pressure monitor from the drugstore. Your blood pressure changes so often throughout the day, it's best to use more than one reading to figure out your average.
What do you need to do before measuring your blood pressure? Don't eat or use caffeine, alcohol, or tobacco products 30 minutes before measuring your blood pressure. Go to the bathroom and empty your bladder. Rest for 3 to 5 minutes and avoid talking. Sit in a comfortable position with your legs and ankles uncrossed and your back supported. And place your left arm raised to the level of your heart on a table or desk and sit still. What is the normal blood pressure as defined by the American Heart Association? Normal blood pressure for adults over 20 years old is a reading lower than 120 by 80. When your blood pressure rises above 120 by 80, you're at risk of developing high blood pressure. High blood pressure is a reading higher than 140 by 90, and low blood pressure is a reading below 90 by 60. So please monitor your blood pressure and be sure to discuss your readings with your doctor.
Take your health to the next level. Go to charicenter.com. That's charicenter.com. Or call 805-963-1111. That's 805-963-1111.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We'll be getting back to our discussion with Marina Spence and the author of Making Every Day a Friday and Enjoying It and having a great time with it. We'll talk a little about her meditation techniques as well as the three inner keys. So stay with us. We'll talk to her in just a moment. Right now we're going to talk with Beth McDonald, our AAA editor, assignment editor, if you will. And I am a little concerned about this moon. I think, Beth, it's getting just a little too close. You know, I'm not looking at it in the rearview mirror that says that things look larger than they really are. But nonetheless, is this something that was predicted, or they tracked this, the astronomers tracked this, I mean, you know, decades ago, and they knew that on March 19th, I guess it is, this moon is going to be closer to us and obviously appear larger than the last time it happened was, who knows, 1,000 years ago or what have you, and the next one won't be for 1,000 years? Or is that due to what happened last Friday?
Well, thank you, Richard, actually, for having me on, and thanks, Marina, for sharing your wisdom with us. And, yeah, this is something that people track. You know, NASA tracks everything.
Oh, yeah.
And astrologers across the world, everybody has different niches. And the guy who's considered to be the guru on this is a guy named Richard Knoll, N-O-L-L-E, and his website is astropro.com. And it's the closest moon that we've had in 18 years. And, the tricky thing about the planets is that, you know, the illusion we have is that the orbits are perfectly circular, and mm-hmm. they're not. They're elliptical or egg-shaped, oval.
Okay.
And so that means every so often something's going to be closer to us than normal, and every so often something's going to be further away. And this just happens to be that cycle with the moon. And my interpretation of it is simply that it enhances whatever the qualities of a full moon are.
Mm.
You know, it tends to make us more emotional about things, more passionate, and, and it's in the, so you have to be mindful of that within yourself and with others. And it's in the sign of Virgo this time, which I adore because a Virgo moon is very much about service. Service above self, service to God, service to mankind. So it's a real easy time to be more empathetic, to be engaged in volunteer work or philanthropy, or simply do nice things for your family, friends, or neighbors.
And that actually ties into where we're headed in the next day or so, and that is into spring, time to plant seeds. Not only the temperatures hopefully will be warming up a bit. I know everybody is very anxious about this summer because of last summer here on the Central Coast. And I do understand that. I won't belabor the point that I loved last summer, and I will take another 20 of those. But it is coming up on spring. Is it the 21st this year or the 22nd?
Actually, it's tomorrow.
The 20th.
Tomorrow
they
at about
snuck it in.
21 Pacific time. You know, it does vary slightly from
yes.
year to year.
Uh-huh.
And for me, the bottom line is the spring equinox is a moment of balance.
Uh-huh.
The days and the nights are of equal length for a mm-hmm. brief and shining moment. And so it's a time to relish and cherish the balance that there is.
Mm-hmm.
And to seek to rebalance that which is not.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, when we look at what's not in balance, you know, especially during a full moon, there can be a tendency to freak out. And so don't do that.
No.
And this is where our speaker comes into play. You know, the full moon is a really good time for meditation. You can be closer to God. There's the sun is leaving Pisces, but there's still a lot of energy there. Pisces rules meditation and connection. And so it is a really good time for that.
And we're going to talk more about that in our second half.
Awesome.
By the way, I shared with you earlier about my electronics experiences as well as automotive over the last, last month.
Yes.
And I found it real interesting. And I'm wondering, again, and Marina made a very good point earlier about how it's hard to see all these things as you're going through them. But
right.
Once you've gotten through them, you kind of look back and say, And I started looking at them, as I mentioned, more metaphorically or metaphysically, in thinking, okay, so those represent connectivity, communications, transportation, mobility, moving forward. And so if people are having those kinds of experiences with their mechanical devices of any kind or electronic, that might be something to look at. That, hey, if your phone's on the fritz, your iPad, your car's having difficulty, what have you, those are, would you say that those are in not only literal, because they need to take care of those things, as we obviously took care of the car, but they're also more, you can look at them more from a euphemistic or metaphorical perspective?
Yes. You're preaching to the choir here, Richard. I do believe that. I definitely believe that. And what I notice sometimes, and when things are shutting down, you know, they need the attention, but then also sometimes that's the universe's way of telling us that we do need to have balance. We do need to have a foot in the material world. Mm-hmm. But honestly, there's times when, you know, my computer stops working and I can't get any traction, and it's the universe's way of saying, hey, stop and pray for a minute, or stop and meditate, or,
you know,
step out of that world. And so, again, to me, those kinds of little breakdowns are just an invitation to greater balance.
Absolutely. And they can achieve more of that through getting in touch with you at BethMcDonaldConsulting.com. Your
yep.
phone number's there as well, and they can ask you questions and schedule a get-together with you with an appointment, what have you. And we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, as always, Richard, and thank you, Marina.
And we'll be back in just a moment with more from Marina Spence, author of Making Every Day a Friday, MakingEveryDayAFriday.com, here on Tell Me Your Story.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
They got married in 1913 when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Very swinging sound here in the Bill Hart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, stand by. They want to get you a man hold right now until they go, stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the greatest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Did you know that you're more likely to stick with an exercise program if you go with a friend? It's more fun and effective. Hi, I'm Peggy Buchanan, the Director of Fitness and Aquatics at Vista Del Monte Retirement Community, inviting you to buddy up. For the next month, we're offering a 2-for-the-price-of-1 special. That's right. $50 lets you and a friend join for 1 month. Here's what our members say they like best about our state-of-the-art facility. Friendly staff, clean facility, great instructors, warm indoor year-round pool, cutting-edge programs and equipment, and a fun place to hang out. So if this sounds like your kind of place, get a buddy and join us at the Vista Del Monte Fitness and Aquatic Center, and you don't have to live here to be a member. Give us a call, 879-5556, or stop by for a tour. That's 879-5556, and we hope to see you soon.
New paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Marina Spence is my guest, author of Making Every Day a Friday, in big letters. Friday is huge on the website, and it's the joy of connecting who you are with what you do. Now, Marina, before we get into the meditation aspect, that's a key right there for individuals. They need to find out who they are, because who they are is not really what they do.
That's right. And there's certain things that we can do that better reflect who we are. So if we don't know who we are, then how do we really know what makes us happy?
Mm. Good point. Okay. So you offer a meditation technique that helps us to get in touch with our intuition, still small voice, what have you, that will help us to find out who we are if we don't know. So give us a little background on this meditation, how you came to sort of create it or intuit it, if you will, and then maybe a description of the process.
Sure. Actually, I'd like to start with a story.
Oh, please.
The name of your show is Tell Me a Story. I'd like to talk about that. I did not intuit this technique. It was taught to me by a teacher. So, but I did see this particular teacher who I ended up studying meditation with for 16 years after that one evening, and he was the first one that, to me, combined meditation with success and being happy. So it wasn't something that I would be doing because I wanted to run away from the world, but more something that I wanted to do because I could be more successful in the world, successful in terms of expressing who I was. So I was inspired to begin a meditation practice. And so I woke up the next morning, and for some reason, I thought I would be good at meditation. And because at that point in my life, I rarely tried anything that I didn't think that I would be good at. So I thought I would be good at meditation. I sat down. I wanted to meditate for 20 minutes, which, by the way, I think now is a little bit too long for the beginning session, but that's what I wanted to do. So I had the clock next to me, and I closed my eyes, and I began the technique that I'll talk about in a moment. And I thought. I thought about what I had done a few nights before. I thought about what I would eat for breakfast. I thought about how good I would be at this. I thought about a friend. I thought about everything. And then I meditated for a nanosecond, and then I thought some more, and I thought some more. And then I looked at the clock, and I thought, well, you know, I've been doing this for so long. You know, I know that it takes a while to get going at this, so I'm going to give myself a break, but because I'm sure I've done it at least for 15 minutes right now. And then I looked at the clock, and Richard, I couldn't believe it. Only 2 minutes had gone by. I was just shocked. And I thought, how can I? This is torture. This is just absolute torture. How can I do this?
Mm.
And so I did, though. I thought, you know what? I really, really, really want to learn to meditate because I felt internally, inside, intuitively, that that would be a key to discovering who I was and to being able to work with my mind and to become friends with my mind in a way that I hadn't known before. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do it. So I did. I did it for the rest of the 18 minutes, and That was almost 30 years ago, and it's hard to believe, but I probably, out of that 30 years, I maybe have missed maybe 5 or 6 sessions,
mm-hmm.
5 or 6 times meditating in the past 30 years. And gradually, I came to, instead of having just a nanosecond of silence between the thoughts, it would just grow more and more. I've come to love it. I've come to depend on it as a way of deepening the connection to myself, as a way of charging up, of getting energy, of knowing who I am, and also a way of just having more fun with life, being able to laugh at myself, being able to be happier and to be deeper at the same time, and to not take everything quite so seriously. So that's what meditation has brought to me. And the technique that I was taught that I would like to pass on is it's so simple. It's so easy. It is sitting quietly someplace where you wouldn't be disturbed for 5 or 10 minutes in the beginning. And sitting comfortably, if that means a chair, that's fine. If it's on the floor, that's fine. Whatever is comfortable. And pointing to yourself, to where you would say me, if you were saying this is me, which is your heart center, and then you can take your hand away after that point, but getting your heart center as your center of focus, as your object of focus, and simply closing your eyes and then just focusing on the heart and knowing that the heart is the center of love and beauty and compassion, and we all need more of that, and just simply being with that heart, and your mind will drift, and then you just come back to the heart, and your mind will drift some more. You'll think about something, and you'll just notice that you're thinking, and then go back to the heart. So it's using the heart as that object of focus, of concentration, letting the mind drift. That's going to happen, but just coming back, just gently, softly, just so quietly coming back and giving yourself lots and lots of congratulations for meditating, a lot of patting yourself on the back at the end of your 5 or 10 minutes, and just a lot of thankfulness and gratitude that you care enough about the divine creature within that you want him or her to come out more and more, and you want to be in touch with that divinity and to have it be expressed in everything that you do.
Now, you can answer this question if you'd like. It kind of elicits more of a personal answer, but who is Marina Spence? Who have you found?
I have found formlessness. I have found spaciousness. I have found awareness. I found consciousness. So I found all those things, and I found all the things that separate me from those beautiful feelings of light and spaciousness and complete in everything. So I found both. I found the divisors, and I found the unity. And what I've come to see is that they're all the same. The separation mm-hmm. is there to protect, and the more I just acknowledge and appreciate those, the doubts, the confusions, the boredom, the anger, the fear, whatever the separators are, the separator feelings or the separator emotions, the more I just recognize that they're all there together, and that the whole enchilada is me, and the more I accept that and acknowledge that, and everything just can release and go, and more of that spaciousness seems to emerge.
And this is something that you set yourself a reasonable time frame to start out with, and you can lengthen it or shorten it, whatever works. But the bottom line is don't create stress for yourself in setting this up, right?
Right, and exactly that, and not expecting a lot, not expecting to be good at it like I did, not expecting any specific results. It's different from anything that we're taught. We're very results oriented. We're focused to doing things a certain way, and we're focused a lot on perfection. So it's letting go of that and just experiencing whatever it is that we're experiencing during that time. And at the same time where we're letting ourselves just be aware of what's going on, we're also focusing. So it's a dual focus. We're observing and we're focusing. We're focusing, we're focusing. And then we're observing when we're outside of that focus, and we're bringing ourselves back to that focus. So it's a very gentle practice, and it's a very private practice too, because no two people experience the same things. I've talked about my meditation, what it's brought to me. For other people, other friends I've talked to, students I've taught, it's just everything is so completely different. But there are some commonalities, and one thing that I like that I've heard a lot, that I've experienced and heard a lot about from other people, is that feeling of not being more in control, in the good sense of that word, of ourselves, so that we're not so much in reactive mode and not so much fueled by our emotions, but we have that sense of observing mm-hmm. what's going on in our lives, being a journalist to our lives in a sense, so that we can see, whoa, that's so interesting what I just did. Isn't that fascinating? And then by having that sense of observation, we can have more control over it. We can think, oh, maybe I really don't want to be angry this time, or maybe I don't want to assume the worst of the other person. So it's a fascinating process, and the beautiful thing is it never ends.
Yeah. It's the difference between having your hand on the rudder of the boat and letting the rudder go where it will as you go downstream.
Yes, Yes, I like that.
That was an image that came into mind. I've had other people phrase it in the context to me, giving me advice and guidance. Become part of the process. Don't try to control the process, because you can't, and you'll only frustrate yourself. And I still find myself doing that from time to time.
Oh, well, that's the beauty of life is we do some of the things, same things over and over, and we do as we watch ourselves do it. You know, there's a point where we'll instead of stepping into the hole, we go around it.
Hmm. When you observe the rest of the world around you, are you able to detach yourself to the extent that you say, why are they doing it that way? Don't they understand that we've done it that way for the last 40 or 50 or 60 or 100 or 200, whatever the time frame is? And we always get the same result, and yet they're doing it again. There are times when I find myself watching, when I do watch the news at night, certain stories, I'm going, I'm not saying that they're doing it wrong. I'm just saying, but you did it that way before 700 times and you got the same result and you're expecting something different this time. Do something different.
Well, that might be, but the they is me. So I don't see that separation so
much.
Okay.
So then if the they is me, what do I do about it?
I don't have any worldwide suggestions or solutions at all. All I have is for myself is looking at where I'm attached to not changing. So if I'm upset about people not changing, or if I'm upset about people, like, for example, some of the things going on in Japan in terms of not being honest with the government not being so completely honest with the people about what's happening, like if that is putting a trigger in me,
mm-hmm.
if I'm upset about that, then I need to turn in and look, okay, where in my life am I not being as honest as I want to be?
Yeah.
Or where am I, plugging into, where am I letting myself be dissuaded in a way that I really don't need to be?
And this still falls under the same category of become part of the process, not don't try to control it. It's the same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. So I think I love watching the news every once in a while, not mm-hmm. too often, but, what's triggering me? Because that's the juicy part for me. It's what I can control and what I can take a look at and what I think I'm here to work on is what's triggering me and how can I let go of those triggers so that I can be of more service both to myself and to other people.
You know, I just flashed on something I was doing last night. I was gathering wood for our fires for the next few nights because of the rain coming, and I was wearing my good hat, and I took it off and I set it over on table outside. And I said, okay, now remember, take that inside tonight because it's going to rain overnight. Well, I forgot it. And it was this morning I woke up and not in a startle or anything. I was like, I'm sitting there watching a movie that we were watching and thinking, I think I left my hat outside. So I just very calmly went outside and it was still sitting exactly where I left it, but it was soaking wet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I brought it in the house and and it's fine. But I thought, how interesting. I told myself to remember to bring it in, and yet I still left it out there. So now I'm pondering, okay, now why did I do that? What is the message I'm trying to tell myself? Going back to the metaphors in life and how they translate into that inner life that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taking those kinds of experiences and when we are able to do so, become the observer. If we can't do it while the events are happening, I understand that. But when you're able to step back and take a look and say, okay, well, what is that experience telling me about myself? Just like what you were saying about, they're being dishonest and my hackles are up over it. So what's going on in my life in that regard? I think that's an interesting process.
It is an interesting process, and when you start going into it, it just turns into I think you have to make it fun.
Yeah, you don't want to judge yourself.
No.
Don't beat yourself
and
up.
Exactly, because then it just turns into life is like the really kind of a dreary analytical, tearing the butterflies off the wings off the butterfly process.
And, yeah.
But just exactly having gentle fun with it and just watching. Life is hilarious. Life is hilarious, and sometimes we miss it. Somebody recently came to a friend's house, and she said, "Oh, I love the jasmines on your front porch. They're just such a blessing, and they're just like pouring out love." And I'm like, "Wow, I didn't even notice them." So it's just like, what's going on around us that we're missing?
Yeah.
Where can we open our eyes and see beauty and see joy? And it's I don't think it's so much in our heads. I think we've heard a lot of the things that are going on in our heads for many, many years.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of a combination of really deep in and really out there, and they're all the same.
I know that we're all trying to find the answers to our lives and the challenges that we face. And I know that there has been, probably in the last 40 or 50 years, there's been this attitude of trying to find the quick fix. And, of course, we've learned that it doesn't exist, that there's no quick fix about it. And yet we also, we go into adulthood thinking, okay, I'm going to do a better job of bringing my children into this world and raising them so they don't have all of that baggage. And yet, we tend to repeat our parents. And somebody said to me the other day, he says, "Boy, it would be so great if we didn't get all of that stuff as children so we could really get on with our purpose in life from an early age instead of having to work through all of this stuff."
That's the juice, though.
Yeah. I guess that's, as you say, it's what makes us who we are. And it puts us where we are to learn the lessons that I guess we're, each of us is here to learn.
Right.
And have
right.
the experiences that we're to have.
Right. And those experiences come in the funniest places, and sometimes they're even at work.
What does Friday mean to you?
Friday means this feeling of, I can do anything. It's a feeling that I don't know if you've ever had a job that you didn't like, but I have. and then on Friday, somehow, even though the thing that I was doing was the very same thing, I just felt better on Friday because I knew that I had some time to myself that was coming up. So that feeling of Friday is a feeling of, I'm doing this for me. I'm doing for what I'm learning. I'm doing for just seeing, having this opportunity on this precious planet, on this earth, at this point, this challenging, crazy point in time, just to see why am I here? What's my purpose, and how can I get to my purpose? And it can be very surprising.
Yeah.
So that's what Friday is this feeling of, it's space for me.
Cool. Marina Spence, thank you so much for joining us, author of Making Every Day a Friday and MakingEveryDayAFriday.com. It's been a pleasure to have you on the program to share your story and, of course, this meditation technique. If you missed it, you go to the website, download the interview or listen to it, and you can get the techniques from her. And very quickly, what are the three inner keys?
Three inner keys, tuning in, which is meditation. Second inner key is being in the present moment, which I call just noticing. And then the third inner key is intuition, really using intuition to guide you in your life and in your work.
Well, thank you. And you can read more about that in her book, Make Every Day a Friday. We encourage you to check out the book and check out her website, MakeEveryDayAFriday.com. Marina, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are doing our best to give you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Dreams are important. Marina said that to me the other day. She says, what's part of what makes life so wonderful is the dreams. Until next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, love to all.